Right. Rolling with the charge. Discharge now. Yeah. Looks like we're getting more people on the call now. Great.
And just so everybody knows, as you're coming in, and you may have been, like you said, charged, I was on another call, and because this that was supposed to have been done by now, and because this call was built on my Zoom information. So if you're just coming in and worried you're late, you can leave that at the door, because we're all arriving at the party at the same time. So,
all right. Well, I think it'll take another few minutes for everyone to come on. Let's see, how many more should we be expecting, Lynn? 1, 2, 3.
Probably about another 8 to 10.
Okay.
But, you know, and they'll get here. So I would.
Yeah.
I would begin.
All right. I'm going to. Well, welcome everybody who is here. I'm so sorry about that delay, but as Lynn said, it's all good. We're going to roll with it and move forward. I'm super, super thrilled that I have the opportunity to present this information. It's really what I'm most passionate about, is helping people have awareness in their system of what might be stuck from the past and how we can resolve that and move on and feel free and really regulate our system back to a place of health and connection. So I have so much information to share with you. It was really challenging for me to try and decide what's important to share, what I should leave out, and it was really hard decision to decide what was appropriate in this class and in next week's class. So I probably have more than we need, and I really appreciate feedback. For those of you who want more detailed science-y stuff, I personally like that. One of the reasons I love Dr. Rita Maria is that she does provide us so much of that scientific validation and understanding. So I would certainly love to offer kind of a level 2, more advanced course. So if people are interested in that, please let me know, because I would love to have the opportunity to share even more than I can in a 4-hour class. So reach out if you do feel like more information and the detail of the physiology would be beneficial or interesting to you. Please let me know, because I would love to offer that. So the first thing that I would like to do is just allow us to kind of settle in. You know, I loved Laura's teachings of how to kind of do the all systems go, which we don't have time for today. If you haven't learned that yet, if you're in the certification program, you'll learn that. But it's a great way, even just simply, to kind of tap our bodies and kind of feel into your body right now, kind of if you want to tap, if you want to tap your feet, just kind of move around a little bit on your chair and feel the support of the chair under you. Feel your physical body. Allow yourself to just shift and move however you need to really settle in and be able to take in the information that we're going to review tonight. Take a deep breath if you need to. And then I'd love for us to just look around and kind of connect with each other. I have the pleasure of having met most of you, and so it just makes me so happy to get to see all of your faces. I love that we have Zoom. I love that we can see each other and feel more connected visually in this way as we work through this material together. So I'm really love the technology, and even though we're all in very different places, that we're all really able to connect energetically in this place together tonight. So I would love for us to just very briefly check in, introduce yourself with your name and maybe a very quick point about what makes you interested in the work or what you're hoping to learn tonight and where you're from. Love to see where everybody is from. And we don't have a lot of time, but I do want us to all have the opportunity to know everybody's name at least. Okay. Let's see. Somebody saying something. I'm hearing some background noise. I'm not sure if there's a question. Might be Martha. Hi, Martha.
Hi.
Welcome. So, oh, Teresa. Hi, Teresa. Can we see you? Or Rita Marie. There she is. And Teresa, if we can have everybody on video, that's great. Let's see. Let's start with Heidi. Just a quick hello, your name, where you're from, and anything that you would like to say about why you're here or what you're hoping to get out of the class. Still on mute.
Oh, sorry. I'm Heidi Kramer. I'm from Central Oregon, and I'm really looking forward to any information, you know, about how to release that charge, that trauma and that nervous energy out of physically out of the nervous system. As close as, or as much as we can get to that, I am interested in that. So.
Thank you, Heidi from Oregon. Ruby.
I'm here. I actually found out last night, so very last minute. But something about this word just keep on pulling me. And for now, even though I'm not seeing clients, but then I really just in my heart, I know that this work is integral part of true healing and true well-being. So that's why I feel I really want to be here. And also I want to discover if there's any stuck energy preventing myself from moving forward and putting myself out there. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you, Ruby. Welcome. And I can't remember where you are. Where do you live?
Oh, I'm in Los Angeles.
LA. Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much. And you know what? This is a perfect place to be, even if you're not practicing or if you're going to practice in the future, right? This information is useful for yourself, for your family, for your loved ones, your friends, as well as for your clients. So I'm so glad you made it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Marcia. They're still muted.
Hi, I'm from West Marin, California, near San Francisco, and I've been working with Laura, and I want to continue to learn how to stop living in my past trauma.
Mm. All right. Well, you're in a good place for that. Thank you, Marcia. Valerie.
Hi, I'm Valerie. I'm in the Houston area. I've been delving into this topic for about a year now, and the deeper I get, the more I learn, and the more I learn I need to be doing this. So it's really being helpful for me.
Thank you, Valerie. Jill.
Hi, I'm Jill Woodward, and I am from the Minneapolis area. I've been working with people for about 15 years, a small practice of working with people with energy techniques and releasing subconscious programs related to all kinds of things, physical and emotional trauma. So I'm very interested in diving deeper, and I'm very excited about the class.
Thank you, Jill. So nice to see you.
You too.
All right. Lynn Rose.
I'm Lynn Rose DiMartini. I'm in the Central Texas area. And I'm trying to utilize it, to find out more about myself. But as a homeopath for the last 12 years, that's what we are working with, is the traumas, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. So it helps integrate some of that as well. So I'm getting a lot from that.
Welcome. Jan.
I'm Jan Chamberlain, and I'm here in Utah, and I'm a graduate of Dr. Rita Marie's Nutritional Endocrinology Program, which I love, and everything about health and healing, and that's why I'm here, because I think this is one of the missing components to health and healing, this energy piece, so I'm excited.
Great. Thanks, Jan. Laura.
Oh, I'm Laura. I'm in the Kootenays, British Columbia, Canada.
And I'm here because I know that I will be hearing many things that I want to know from you. Kim.
Wonderful. Thank you, Laura. Thank you. Welcome. Debbie, hi.
Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm in Santa Barbara, California. And I heard your talk. I listened to your recording, the recording that you, that was on the ERC website of the talk that you did. And it was just so enlightening for me because I have had my own experience of childhood trauma. And so I want, when you mentioned that you were going to go into greater detail in this 4-hour course, I was very interested in learning more and also just more tools for healing and then eventually to be able to share that with others. So.
Thank you. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Mary Lynn, hi. Still can't quite hear you. Marilyn, you're muted. You there? Still muted. Well,
maybe co-host and I'll unmute people for you.
I think I can hear you now. Can you speak up again?
Yes.
There we go. That works.
This doesn't work. I have to put in my other microphone, but I'll speak. I live in Southern California in Redlands. I'm here because I've discovered the emotional piece of my healing is very large, and I just keep learning more and going deeper. So I'm really glad to be here. I keep learning more from Laura and Kimberly every time, so I'm very grateful.
Thanks, Mary Lynn. Welcome. Angelica.
Hi, everyone. Sorry, I'm kind of in shadow. Okay. I'm living in Austin, Texas, and I'm here because I'm in the TEH Energy Healing Program with Laura, and I'm also in the NEPT for Dr. Marita Marie. And I'm just very curious about how this area is going to help me and just help me with my becoming a therapist.
Nice. Welcome. Nice to have you. Janet.
Hi, everyone. It's so nice to see all of you again and meet you new people. And I'm in Dr. Rita Marie's program and Laura's program. And I just don't miss anything. There's just so much yet to learn, and all of this works together so well, and it's so important for us to have this piece of it. So thank you, Kimberly, for bringing it. Thank you.
My pleasure. And where are you right now, Janet?
Oh, right now I'm on the Oregon coast. I'll be here for a few more months.
Hey.
And I'll be off again.
All right, welcome. And let's see, we have Teresa. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Teresa. I live in Chicago. I'm a member of Dr. Marita Marie's program, as well as several different offerings and programs with Laura, and just diving back in and getting reacquainted and yeah.
It's lovely to see you again. Welcome. Happy
you too. Thank you.
And Martha. Still muted.
Okay. Got it. Hey, I'm Martha, and I live at the beach, Atlantic Beach, North Carolina. And I am a longtime student in Dr. Rita Marie's programs. And I'm listening to her and doing what she says and said that I needed this. So, you know, reluctantly, sometimes you do things when they push you out of your comfort zone. And yeah, so, you know, just like you have to deal, we're helping people deal with their health issues. This
like
is all
fifth water.
Part of it. So I'm glad to be here.
Welcome, Martha. Thank you. And I have to say that Rita Marie has encouraged me to do a lot of uncomfortable things, and she's always been right. So probably a good thing that you're here. So welcome. Happy to have you. And is it Detria? Hi, I don't know you. Welcome. It's nice to meet you.
Hello. Yes, it's Detria.
Hi.
I'm from El Paso, Texas, and I am a fan and also a student of Dr. Rita Marie's programs. And I watched the webinar, and I felt really, based on things that are going on, I just felt really drawn to participating in this and learning more. So help myself, family, and clients as well.
Welcome. So happy to meet you and have you with us. Thank you. All right, and we have Lynn DeBure Johnson with us as well. Hi.
Hello. I'm Lynn. I live along the Minnesota-Iowa border, and I most of my work is done with Dr. Rita Marie. I also participate and learn greatly from Laura. And this subject of trauma just fascinates me because it's like the great unknown. I'm learning how the stories there that live within us. And as I am learning more about constellations and medicine and all that, it's just like fascinating how it all works together.
Thank you, Lynn, for all of the support that you've given me so that I can present this information. And thank you to Rita Marie for allowing me to do this, and for Laura, for both of you have just, I mean, I can't tell you guys how super excited and honored I am to get to be in the presence of these amazing ladies and be offering what I know, right, with these beautiful people that are really in their brilliance. So I am super charged up, excited that I get to be in their presence and be working with all of you to share this. So thank you both, Rita Marie and Laura. So great to have you both on the call too. Laura, would you like to say hello? Muted still.
And I just said something so profound that I can't remember what it was. No, I'm teasing. It's always such a thrill and honor to be with all of you. And I'm excited to learn from you, Kimberly, because you have such a beautiful understanding and bridge between the worlds of nutrition and trauma and energy work. So it's really, I'm looking forward to learning and growing and getting whatever piece I can get from you. And Rita Marie, it's always so exciting to be a part of everything and anything that you create. So it's just a thrill to be here to share what I'm passionate about. And that's it. I'm here in Austin, Texas with Rita Marie, and we never see each other because we're so busy all the time. But it's great. So it's great to be here.
Thank you, Laura.
Yeah.
Rita Marie, anything you'd like to share with us? We all know you.
Yeah, mostly. I don't know Deitra. I mean, she knows me, but she hasn't been on any active calls. And Angelica's in Austin as well, Laura. So, so I'm excited to be here, and I'm honored that you have decided to share this work with us and be part of this. And I'm really excited, and like Laura, looking forward to learning from you in this other area. And really what I want is that so much of the work I do with clients, there are so many of them who have these traumas that they're doing all the right things nutritionally, lifestyle, etc., but there's still something getting in the way of their healing. And I really want to learn how to work with that. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Rita Marie. And I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to have the TEH program and Laura's information in more of a formal process where we can really learn, not only learn the information, but learn how to implement the information appropriately with our clients, right? It's really a phenomenal tool to be able to help them heal the root cause. And so often when you're working with a client who is doing everything that you tell them to do, everything you suggest with lifestyle and supplements and healing their physical body, if they're not seeing progress, then you want to suspect trauma, unresolved trauma. I'll be really clear about that. There is a difference between experiencing a traumatic event and having unresolved trauma in the body. So we'll talk a lot about that today, but it's a very important tool for any kind of coach or therapist or practitioner, I believe, to understand the process of the charge of stress or trauma and be curious about that if your client is not getting the results with the traditional tools that we know work. Be suspective that there could be some trauma at the root of that. And so my goal is to give you a piece of that today. I really highly encourage, many of you are already enrolled in the full certification program, but I can't tell you how the full program that I've done with Laura has totally catapulted my practice into a totally amazing place. So with what I've learned with Rita Marie and NEPT was phenomenal, but the work that I've done with the TEH program has really solidified my abilities to implement this work fully and work with clients. So I apologize if my internet is unstable. Hopefully you can all mostly hear me. So again, I have a lot of information to share. I'm going to be using my presentation and I won't be able to see you all. So I invite you to unmute yourself and ask a question if something comes up or if you need clarification. Okay. Or you could put it in the chat and Lynn could let me know when it's appropriate. Does that work for everyone? Put it in the chat and then Lynn can bring it up. If it seems appropriate to interrupt Lynn, please go ahead and do that. And it's frustrating when I can't see you all and see how you're responding. So I'll check in, but please ask questions via chat. So, and we are recording. Great. I'm going to share my screen. Here we go. And okay. So always doing the medical disclaimer off the bat that the information in the presentation is not intended to replace the one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, not intended as medical advice. It's intended as a sharing of knowledge and information from the research and experience of myself and all the beautiful people that have contributed. And we encourage you to make your own healthcare decisions based upon your research and partnership with the qualified healthcare professional. I know that seems familiar to all of you. You've seen it before, but it is very important to make sure we get that in there. So this is a two-part class. Part one tonight is about how to recognize the energy and physiology of trauma within yourself and your friends and your family and your clients. It is going to be a little more academic and a little bit more clinical tonight to give us the foundation for next week, which will go more into how to heal it. But tonight we're going to define energy and charge, review the physiology and trauma in the nervous system, a very simplistic idea of the physiology. And again, if people that are interested in more detail, I would be thrilled to go in more detail for anybody that cares to learn more. You don't need to know more. But if you are like me, you like the science, I'd love to pass that along as well. But we're also going to learn about what I think is a very useful tool for all of you, even if you don't work with trauma clients, is to understand the polyvagal theory and understand the vagus nerve a little bit more. And we'll talk briefly about how the long-term effects of unresolved trauma and especially earlier childhood trauma affect our health and well-being. Part two, again, is going to be a little more interactive, not quite as academic. We're going to do a little bit more interactive stuff with each other next week, where we go into the introduction of the personal energy patterns, which will help us understand how different people tend to flow the charge of stress and trauma through their body. There's some very distinctive patterns that we can fall into. We're going to go over, which I love this concept, the four R's of the polyvagal approach to healing, because all of us in NEPT are probably pretty familiar with the functional approach of the four R's of healing the gut. And in the polyvagal approach, we have four R's of healing too. So I love this and I can't wait to share it, but you have to have the basic foundation of the physiology to understand this. So we'll do that tonight. I'm also going to give you some tips on how to know when you really need to refer a friend or family member or a client to a trained trauma therapist, and how you can help yourself and your friends and family to heal trauma patterns. But it is important to know when it's appropriate to get somebody else involved. So that's part two. So back to today. Let's just start with the concept of energy. All right. Now, many of you are already signed up for Laura's class coming up this Saturday on creating an energy connection. And Laura's brilliant at explaining energy way better than I am. But I'm just going to briefly say that energy is what the world is made of, okay? Everything that exists is energy. We don't have time to get into the science of it. We don't need to tonight. There's plenty of people that do that, and Laura is a great resource, and many of you have already had this understanding. But I love this quote, that everything is energy, and that's all there is to it, right? Let's just trust that and move on. And oh, and another quote that I love also is Tesla, saying that if you want to find out the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration, okay? And I just bring these two quotes up because I think it's really important to show that two of the most respected scientists of our time are talking about energy. This is not woo-woo, right? This is very real, okay? So again, for those of you enrolled in Laura's class coming up, creating an energy connection, and I'll probably have her speak about that at the very end if you haven't enrolled, so teach you how you can do that. Learn more about how to use energy with your client. But the basic thing that you need to know right now is that we're going to talk about energy and what I call the charge, okay? I'm going to skip that, save time. Charge. Charge is just another name for energy or for life force. There's an unlimited amount of energy because everything has a charge, because everything is made of energy. We can use the terms interchangeably, but I use charge a lot, so you'll know what I mean when I say charge. But the natural state of energy is that it's in motion, okay? It's always moving. It can be really, really slow or it can be really, really fast, but it needs to move. So we're going to talk about the flow of charge, the flow of energy, specifically the flow of stress or trauma, or the charge of stress in our system, the charge of trauma in our system, and the physiology of that. Okay. Some qualities of charge. Charge is generally neutral, but we can perceive it either as positive or negative. So it really depends on our perception in the context that really makes it either positive or negative. Charge or energy absolutely affects our physiology, positively and negatively, again, depending on our perception. And we can be overcharged or we can be undercharged. Again, the charge should be moving. It could be a slow move, it could be quick, but we don't want it to be blocked. We don't want to contain it or suppress it. And to be healthy, we need to be able to regulate charge in our system and have a balanced flow of the charge moving through the body. And we can learn to sense the charge, to cultivate the charge, and to manage the charge so that we can live a really vibrantly healthy life. There's a really normal cycle of charge and discharge in the system, okay? And that's something happens that affects us and charges us up, right? We eventually hit a peak in the charge, and then our body starts to allow, if we're in a healthy place and we know how to allow, we can allow the discharge and we move back down into relaxation. Okay, the timing of this cycle varies and there can be disruptions in the cycle. But we experience many of these cycles throughout the day. A lot of times throughout the day, we're experiencing this normal charge-discharge cycle. Okay, we naturally charge and discharge all throughout the day, and our body's always striving for balance and flow of the charge, right? There's inhaling and exhaling. There's eating and elimination. There's working, there's sleeping, right? Many activities can be either charging or discharging depending on the circumstances and depending on your intention of it. And when the balance is upset, we can become either undercharged or we can be overcharged. And we can experience a mixture of both over and undercharged at the same time. So one part of our body or energy system can be charged up where the other part can be depleted or undercharged. So it's not simple. I want to talk about it and think about it in simple terms, but know that it can be actually very complicated and the charge can be very different in different parts of our body. We do cycle often throughout the day in this charge-discharge cycle. So, for instance, we get charged up when we feel love for our spouse or our family members, or when we get love from our spouse or our children or our pets even. That's a good charge, right? We enjoy that kind of charge. We might not enjoy the charge of taking a test or injuring ourselves, or our cell phone breaks or our car breaks down, right? We might not enjoy that so much, but it's still a charge. And we have these normal charges and discharges all day long. And much of what we're charged up about is actually based on our own perception or interpretation of the situation. The body's going to respond to all these different situations before the brain can register what's happening. So we're going to go into the physiology of this, how the charge in the nervous system happens before the brain can interpret the situation. So let's categorize the charge a little bit in more detail. Okay. Some of you guys saw the webinar I did last week with Rita Marie and Dr. Rita Marie, and we talked about the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? There's good charge that we would classify as a very pleasurable thing. And there's even some stressful situations that are really good, and we call that eustress. Then there's the bad charge, and chronic stress or toxic stressors are categorized here as kind of negative in the system. And then there's the ugly, which is the topic of the evening, right? Trauma. The good charge in our system is fun. It's exciting. It's a really pleasurable experience overall. And even if it's not pleasurable, eustress or the good stress is necessary for life and for good health, because this charge experience in the system helps us to grow physically. Like, we need exercise, right? That is stressful to the muscles, but without it, we can't maintain healthy muscle tone. We absolutely need it for growth and maintenance. We need it for our mental health, for our emotional and our spiritual health and growth and development. We need stress, good stress, positive stress, as well as some of the negative, challenging stressors in our life to help us grow. And it helps us create a really passionate and meaningful life as well. When the flow or the charge is allowed to flow in the normal charge and discharge cycle, then it's not a problem. It might be a little uncomfortable, but when we allow the natural flow of the charge, it's a normal thing in our system, and our physiology is used to it, and it will grow in a positive direction for us. Then when we have a little bit more of an intensive threat, the body is designed to deal with some scary things, right? There is threat in life. And so our system is designed to be able to immediately respond to a threat. And whether that threat is real or perceived, it doesn't matter. The body is still going to respond the same way with our stress response system. But it's designed for acute stress or short-term stresses, right? There's no thinking. The body first senses it through the autonomic nervous system, and it's very, very quick. And the threat initiates the sympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system, again, designed for short-term stresses. And then when the threat is gone, we move into the relaxation state of the parasympathetic system. When does it become really bad or toxic? Well, when it happens all the time. So if we have a bigger stress that isn't going away, it can become toxic. When we have smaller stresses that build up and build up, and we have lots of them, and it becomes overwhelming or burdening to the system. And here we see the dysregulation of the normal stress response, which leads to chronic disease. If we don't have resolution from the stress, right? So if the stress isn't going away, that's a problem, because the system is designed to deal with the threat or the stress. And when the stress is gone, we naturally discharge back down to a peaceful, normal place. So if we don't get resolution, or the threat happens over and over and over again, or there's lots of small stressors happening at the same time, our system becomes dysregulated. So many different types of stress, some negative stress, right? There's the obvious of the physical stress. And the more we're exposed to these stressors, whatever kind of stress it is, the more severe the event, the higher the likelihood of damage and dysregulation to our system. Okay, so again, the obvious stressors are the physical accidents, natural disasters, fires, floods, injuries, surgeries, things that harm our physical body that we can see and that we can feel, okay? Then there's the chemical stress, right? We actually are, you all know, we're bombarded with toxic chemicals. It's in our water, it's in our food, it's in our air, it's in our body care products. There's the invisible Wi-Fi EMFs that are toxic to our nervous system especially. And then, of course, there's the toxic bacterias and parasites and funguses and molds and viruses, things that we can't see, but they absolutely disrupt our system as much as a physical stressor does. And the longer we're exposed to these stressors, again, the more toxic they become to the system. And then, of course, we have emotional stress, right? Ideally, emotions follow the normal charge-discharge cycle. And if we allow ourselves, or we're able to allow ourselves to feel the emotion, and we get the opportunity to express the emotion, it will flow through the cycle, and it's not going to burden our system as stress. But emotional or relational stress or charge that comes from emotions and relationships that doesn't get to be expressed or discharged gets stuck in the system and can create dis-ease. So I want to bring up other common issues that can trigger the stress response, because the body doesn't know the difference between the types of stressors, okay? So it's going to respond to any stress the same way. Okay, so things that we might not think about as being stressful or traumatizing to our system absolutely trigger the stress response if we don't get to resolve it. Okay, so things like digestive imbalances, poor digestion and absorption, leaky gut, candida, parasites, food allergies, nutrient depleted foods, high glycemic foods, GMOs, pesticides. I know I'm preaching to the choir here because you all know about blood sugar issues and imbalances and inflammation and immune system problems and poor sleep and all of that stuff. But I just wanted to show you how many things can trigger the stress response internally that we don't often think of, okay? So all these types of stressors are threats to our survival and our well-being. And they're first detected by the autonomic nervous system as a threat. And when we're able to resolve these things and we reset our system back to calm, rest and digest, right, we're much more able to maintain good health. But often we're not even aware that these things are happening to us. So you as health coaches are really able to help a client see where these possible stressors might be inhibiting their healing and their ability to heal and move on with their healing process. The brain cannot distinguish one type of toxic stress from another. All of these things are toxic stress and have the same impact on the body. So we might not have a toxic relationship or have a trauma from our past, but our healing is disrupted because one of these other things is in the way, causing the same response as if we did have a trauma. So chronic stress is really the dangerous thing. And it's estimated that chronic stress is linked to the 6 leading causes of death in America: heart disease, cancer, lung ailments, accidents, cirrhosis of the liver, and suicides. So the 6 leading causes of death in America being directly related to chronic stress makes it pretty obvious that we need to address the possibility of chronic stress being at the root of our clients' issues, right? And I say the thing is to remember that it's not the event. It is the ability for us to resolve the event that's really important. If we don't get to complete the cycle, that's when we get stuck in the dangerous situations, okay? When we have resolution of the problem and we get to complete the normal charge and discharge cycle out of our system, it's easy to maintain good health. And we build a very resilient nervous system through having stressors that we can resolve. So it's really imperative these days that we have stress management skills in our modern life, because we are constantly bombarded with stressors. And Dr. Rita Marie does a beautiful job of teaching the foundations for health, right? This is what we do with our clients before we go into other things. We look at the fundamentals, right? The body freedom foundations, fun, sleep, exercise, environment, diet, outlook, and mindfulness are foundational things that we all need to reiterate with our clients. We have to have these skills in modern day. Absolutely. But for those of us that don't have the opportunity to complete the cycle, then that disruption of the normal cycle really can lead to health issues. So I want you to think about, how is your flow? What is it like for you when you get charged up? Because many of us can get stuck somewhere in the cycle. And we're going to learn more about this next week in the common patterns, the common personal energy patterns. Some people have a hard time tolerating charge at all. So they don't have an ability to allow themselves to get charged up to the point of the peak. And the peak is a good thing. You can think of the peak like reaching orgasm. Right? It's a really important part and can be enjoyable part of the process. So we want to be able to allow our system to handle the intensity of the charge up to the peak. Some people have a hard time discharging because it can be a sense of being out of control to allow the discharge to take place. So there's a lot of different variations here. I just want you to spend some time this week thinking about this. Where in the cycle do you more often get stuck, or where do you block the flow of the charge or discharge? And again, any charge, it could be a positive charge or a negative charge. Just kind of pay attention to your own system and notice where in the cycle you're more likely to get stuck. Because if we get stuck and we can't resolve the problem, that's when we move into overwhelm, right? This is the ugly, the trauma. There's a lot of different definitions of trauma, but what I really like to focus on is the idea here in the nervous system. Trauma is when we hit overwhelm because the normal fight or flight response options don't work out for resolution. Okay, we do not get to say no. We can't fight anymore. We can't run away anymore. We don't have the option to say no. And there's no one there to help us resolve the situation. So the system has this beautiful shutdown response. We call it freeze. It's a really important biological response to conserve your energy. The body can't be in fight or flight forever. There is not an unlimited amount of resources to stay in fight or flight. So if the situation is no longer a situation where you can resolve it, your body will shut down and freeze. So if you're in that place, you can be in that place for many reasons. Right? There is shock or event trauma. So obvious things like a earthquake or a fire or an accident or a rape. Then it's like a one-time event issue. There's the repeated or chronic stressors that we talked about can turn into overwhelm in the system. The body can only tolerate so much. And so many repeated chronic stressors, even if they're small, they happen so often that the body can no longer tolerate it, and it's going to shut down and defreeze as a way to survive the overwhelm. And then there's the developmental early childhood trauma. We will talk a little bit about ACEs, their adverse childhood experiences, and I want to kind of help you see the difference between what a developmental trauma might be versus an adverse experience as a child might be. Early childhood stress and trauma sets us up for a higher likelihood of adult illness because the impact of this unresolved charge in the system really affects the brain of the underdeveloped system. So young children do not have developed nervous systems and brains yet. So when we add a very intense charge of stress or trauma, and that charge does not get the opportunity to get resolved it can change the system pretty drastically, and it sets us up for a much higher likelihood of adult illness. Okay. So I know I asked you, and thank you so much to all of you that did send me back your ACEs score. And I did, I think, have you guys look at the articles on the website called ACEstoohigh.com. By the way, I'm going to make sure you all have access to these presentation slides. There's a lot of resources listed at the end. So you can learn more about this on your own. But the ACEs study, for those of you who don't know, comes from Kaiser Permanente, a study that they did. And they call it groundbreaking public health study, where we discovered that childhood trauma leads to adult onset chronic disease. Like, as practitioners, we know, like, duh, right? We know this. But to have studies published that prove this is really significant for how medical professionals perceive stress and trauma. So I just want to quickly review the five main discoveries from this ACE study, right? ACEs are really, really common, okay? In fact, two-thirds of us adults in America, North America, have at least one. ACEs, as we just said, can be the cause of adult onset disease, such as cancer and heart disease, as well as mental illness, as well as having violence in your life or being a victim of violence. ACEs don't occur alone. If you have one, there's an 87% chance that you'll have two or more. And the more ACEs you have, the greater the risk for chronic disease and mental illness, right? As well as violence and being a victim of violence. So people with an ACE score of 4 are twice as likely to be smokers, 7 times more likely to be alcoholics. Having an ACE score of 4 increases the risk of diseases like emphysema, chronic bronchitis by 400%, and suicide, a score of 4 increases your chance of suicide by 1200%, okay? People with high ACE scores are more likely to be violent, more likely to have more marriages and more broken bones, more drug prescriptions, more depression, and more autoimmune disease, right? We see a lot of clients with autoimmune disease. People with an ACE score of 6 or higher are at risk of their lifespan being shortened by 20 years. So very significant things. But the fifth finding here is important for us to know, especially as health practitioners, right? The ACEs are responsible for a big chunk of workplace absenteeism, for cost in healthcare, emergency response, mental health, and criminal justice. So childhood adversity contributes to most of our major healthcare, chronic health, mental health, economic health, and social health issues. So it's really crucial to remember some things here about the ACEs, right? Having childhood trauma doesn't mean that we will definitely have disease as an adult, but the risk is higher, much higher. The more trauma we have as kids, the higher our likelihood of adult disease is. And it's much higher if that trauma wasn't resolved. Okay. Remember also that it's never, never, never too late to resolve past trauma out of the system, right? The human body is incredibly resilient. And it's wired to shift and change and reshape. We just need to learn how to do this, right? And we need a safe environment to do it in. So again, everyone is susceptible. The original ACE study included 17,000 participants that were white, middle and upper class people, college educated. They had jobs and they had great health care, right? Everyone is susceptible to physical and emotional damage of stress and trauma. But again, I want to remind you, not everyone with ACEs gets sick. Okay. Before I go on to the next slide, oh wait, do I want to do that here? No, I want to do this. Developmental trauma versus the ACEs. The ACEs score is very simple. It has 10 different event type of situations that you might have been exposed to. But even if you're not exposed to those, you might have had some attachment or developmental trauma. Babies cannot regulate their own nervous system when they're first born. We absolutely, as humans, depend on our parents and caregivers to regulate the system for us first. They have to regulate our system for us. And then they co-regulate our system with us, and then they model healthy regulation for us so that we can eventually be able to regulate our own system and feel safe in co-regulating with others as we age. So as we get older, we have the connection and safe connection with other people that's so absolutely crucial for health and well-being of human beings. And if this is missing in childhood, it can have the same effects as the other obvious traumas that the ACEs cover on the ACEs score. So even if it doesn't seem like there's any obvious traumas, there can be some developmental disruption in our nervous system and our ability to regulate our own system that is just as disruptive as these event traumas that we talk about in the ACEs test. So I would love the ACEs test because it's a great opportunity to work with your clients. It's a kind of a great starting point to help them bring awareness to their experience and the possibility of trauma being at the root of their symptoms, right? But there's a few things that I just want to bring up for you to have in mind if you're going to use this test with your clients, right? I find that many times when I start doing a review of this test with the client, they end up having by the end of our session, they end up having a higher score because when they tested it themselves, they weren't really in tune necessarily with the severity of their experience. And as they start to share with me, what I've noticed with people with trauma histories that they often are really good at seeing the positive side of things and they can downplay the severity of their experience, right? So when we have more of a conversation about it, often it ends up being that they do have a higher score than they originally thought. So some tips, if you're going to use this test with people, is to avoid getting stuck in the story, right? The specifics don't matter at this point. It's really about an assessment of events, okay? If they're upset with having a higher score, we can point out their resilience, right? They survived these things, and it's never too late to resolve this out of their system. But they are incredibly resilient that they got through those challenging situations. And remember that having ACEs doesn't mean you will get sick, but it does mean that you are at a higher risk. So it's a great thing that they're reviewing this with you now so that they can really work through this and shift their system into a more powerful healing place. Remember that trauma doesn't live in the event itself. Okay, it lives in the system, and the system can be healed. So although it might seem like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have this client take this test and see how traumatized they've been, I don't see it that way. I see it as an opportunity for us to bring awareness to the possibility that trauma is there. But again, try not to get stuck in the story. If they do get upset, point out their resilience. And awareness is the biggest, is a starting point for us to move through the trauma that might still be alive in their system. So we don't have to focus on the event. We want to focus on their resilience and then start coming together for a plan on what we can do about the possible trauma that's stuck in their system. I'd like to share just a quick story of how poignant this ACE review can be. I actually, I'm going to stop the share for just a minute. And so I can see everybody's faces and share a really great story that this wonderful woman said that it was okay to share with. But I actually had a great experience with Heidi. This morning we were doing an ACE review with her, and she was very clear and very aware of the different experiences, that maybe traumatizing experiences that she had in her life. And so clearly when she was articulating it very well. She had awareness of the ACEs in her life, that were more actually a little bit later on in her life. And she had this beautiful epiphany that, wow, because I didn't have these more stressful things happen, or because I had beautiful attachment with my family, it built resilience in my system that really served me well moving forward when I did have some trauma later on in life. And I don't know, Heidi, if I'm articulating that really well, and if you would like to share anything about your experience with this, you're welcome to. But I really want to point out that the ACE review is an opportunity for you as a practitioner to get a sense of what the client's awareness is around their own experiences in childhood and early adult years. And then also it can help you have a better sense. And so you can be on the same page and you can talk the same language, right? It can feel like, oh, I don't want to have them bring up all of their painful trauma. It's not about that. It's about helping them have awareness around their situation. And then later we're going to move more into awareness of what's still alive in their system. But because Heidi had a beautiful, Heidi, would you like to share anything about your experience with that? It was a lovely aha moment that I enjoyed watching so much. And you're muted.
It was just great actually, because I already knew that I had tons of trauma in my life and that it affected my health. But it was so beautiful to look at that ACEs and realize that for the first 15 years of my life, it was just, I had a beautiful, supportive, healthy family helping me to cement some of this resilience in that carried me through the next, 30 years of some difficulties and really helped me resolve it later. So that was, I hadn't really noticed that before. So it was really great to see that, to realize that.
So. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for allowing us to discuss your experience. And again, I just think it's important because many people that therapists that I've worked with have been a little bit uncomfortable. They're like, oh, I don't want to bring up all the negative. But it really is helpful to start having awareness around what has happened. And you might be surprised at what comes up with the awareness and the discussion around it. So it's a great starting point. If you're working with somebody that you suspect that earlier childhood trauma could be at the root, here's a great tool for you to use. And these guidelines hopefully will give you some confidence in implementing this tool with your clients. And I'm just going to check in now if there's any questions before I move into the rest of the presentation. Lynn, was there any in the chat that you felt were significant that I should answer?
No, people were just really, Laura did have one question. Could I have lived through a trauma in my childhood that opened environmental sensitivities?
That opened? I'm not.
Well, so that she's experiencing environmental sensitivity. So she was sharing earlier how she went to a hardware store and the smell of the paints and things like that charged her. And mm-hmm. so would early childhood traumas be a contributory factor to that?
Yeah, that's an interesting situation, Laura. Actually, smell is one of the things that can trigger very quickly and easily trigger a past trauma memory that's an unresolved trauma that might be in the system. So it's not uncommon for me to hear stories of a trigger being a smell. But also what comes to mind is that those chemicals are very toxic and disruptive. Your body doesn't know the difference between a tiger chasing you and a toxic chemical that's killing you, right? So you can have a strong reaction to something that's dangerous in your body before your brain can tell what's happening. So it could certainly be triggering a past event, but it could also be that your system recognized this is really dangerous. I shouldn't be around this.
Yeah, and she says her genes say that she's sensitive to chemicals. And then she also comments, focus on resilience, not the original trauma. What does that mean?
So at this point, when we're just meeting with a client and discussing their possible childhood trauma, and we're kind of getting a sense of their story, and if they feel upset at the number of ACEs that they have, what I'm going to shift the conversation to how resilient their system is that they survived. They survived this many ACEs. So instead of focusing on being upset that I have these ACEs, I, as a practitioner, can just shift the tone of the conversation to help them see the resilience that they have and the brilliance. Actually, our nervous system, our stress response system, is brilliant in figuring out how to adapt to really challenging, horrible situations. So I think it's important for us as practitioners, or even friends and loved ones, if we come up against somebody being upset about their trauma history, is that we can help in that moment by boosting their understanding, or their helping them see the resilience that they're born with. Does that help?
And Debbie says, Laura, you might look into dynamic neural retraining system, DNRS.
Oh, good tips. All right. So Angelica, are you raising your hand there?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, I mean, maybe we'll address this later in the course, but because I took the assessment and I didn't have any ACEs, I'm wondering, would you offer some strategies for being able to relate to our clients who have had some serious ones? And yeah, I would just be very curious about that.
Yeah, well, you know what? Luckily, you're enrolled in the whole TEH program, and you absolutely, absolutely get a lot of skills there. But what I would also say is, just because you don't have a score on the ACE doesn't mean there was some disruption in your nervous system from overwhelm or some traumatic experiences. And many of us were lucky to not have any of the childhood adverse experiences that are on the test. But sometimes we, because of the way the test is worded, sometimes we miss some of the relational or developmental challenges that we had as kids that can have the same response in the body as some of these obvious traumas. So even if there's, you know, a loving home and outwardly we think everything was fine, there might still be some stress or overwhelm in the nervous system from some of the relational and developmental things. So we're going to learn a little bit more about those patterns next week. And again, because you're in TEH, you're going to have lots and lots of training and support around how to deal with, even if you haven't had this trauma, you'll have some really great skills on how to navigate it. And you're going to learn how to refer out when you recognize something that's beyond your scope of practice. You'll be confident that what you're seeing is beyond your scope of practice, and you'll be able to refer.
Okay. And Janine says, can birth be a trauma?
Oh, absolutely. Janine, that is a good point. And I didn't put that slide in here, but I do have a slide about actually birth itself. And coming from a midwife, I practiced as a midwife for many years, I know that the birth process itself can be incredibly traumatizing, and that can set your whole system up for a trauma pattern throughout your whole life, even gestation. So you are taking in your mother's experience before you're born. You're taking in the experience of your birth, and you're taking in the experience of everyone around you at your birth. So absolutely, birth trauma is something I work with a lot, both for women giving birth as well as your own birth. Coming into this world can be pretty overwhelmingly traumatic. So that's a good point. And then we also can have inherited trauma, generational trauma, which we're not going to touch on a lot. But the truth is that stress and trauma epigenetically changes our DNA. And we can pass that, we do, in fact, pass that down to our children and our grandchildren. It's fascinating science that if I do a more in-depth class, I'd love to bring that topic to the forefront. But it's a good point, Janine. And yes, absolutely. Birth trauma really can overwhelm, and it can be very problematic.
Well, going along with your physical stress too, because we as mothers, or our mothers and their mothers, could have passed on pathogenic stress. So, yeah. You know, all that's another part to it. But I really enjoy hearing that we don't necessarily need to get caught up in what that story is. Mm-hmm. I like that you keep emphasizing it's not the story, it's just the trauma, because somebody, you know, like Angelica was saying, I don't have anything on the ACE, but your body is saying, I perceived it as a stress. Mm-hmm. And so, just like Ruby's son, his, I love it. I really like hearing that you're saying it's not that one person's story is more traumatic or not than another. It's just how you perceive it, how your body is perceiving it. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you for articulating that. I'm going to go over that quite a few times and say it in different ways so it really sticks. But it's not about the story. It's about our interpretation, and it's about how much can our system tolerate? How much more can our system tolerate? And it's an important thing to be able to know about yourself and also to be able to help your clients be aware of, right? And it's not what happened. And so we want to work on not judging the trauma as being more or less than somebody else's trauma, not comparing to anything or to anybody else, right? It's like, what is alive in my system now? And in being able to look at it with curiosity instead of judgment. So I'm going to move on so that we can get as many of these slides done. I'm going to share my screen again. Oh, share. I pushed the wrong button. Sorry. So let's move into the next concept here of how are we going to sense the charge? How do we sense the charge in our system? Okay. The autonomic nervous system really is at the top of the hierarchy here in us understanding and sensing the charge that we're around. The autonomic nervous system is our personal surveillance system. It's always on guard and it's always asking, is this safe? Am I safe? Whatever situation you're in your day, throughout your day, in your world, your autonomic nervous system is always turned on. It's always on guard and it's always asking, is this safe? And it shapes our experience of safety and it shapes our ability for connection. Okay. And I'm sorry, I have to try and figure out how to move. I have the, there. Okay. Few points that I want you to understand about the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system basics here. Autonomic energy moves in patterns of defense and protection. There's no cognitive thinking in this process, okay? It happens below the level of our conscious awareness. And the autonomic nervous system does not make judgments. There's no good or bad. It's only safe or not safe, period. Safe or not safe. It manages risks and it creates patterns of connection by changing and adjusting our physiological state. Okay, so I want to share with you my model that I like to use to explain the different states of the autonomic nervous system. Okay, so I love using maps because it's really helpful with my clients, with our clients, to have a map because we can be speaking the same language, okay? So I use this map because it resonates really well with me. This is a map adapted from Peter Levine's original model. Peter Levine is a pioneer in the field of trauma therapy, and he originated the healing model called somatic experiencing, and so he's really interesting, and I love his work, and you can read more about him if you're interested in more work in the somatic experiencing field. But I love this map, again, to help you understand the flow of the charge of stress or trauma in the system. And again, maps give us the ability to speak the same language as our clients. It gives them some context to build awareness of their own experience and how that's happening in their system and the ability to communicate with you of what's happening in their system. So again, it's a simplified map and it starts with the relaxed state of zero. State zero is where we want to be most of the time throughout the day. We're relaxed, but we're alert. We're very aware. We're not zoned out. We're very alert. We're very clear. And this is, again, where we want to stay most of the time. It's when we call it presence, right? When we're really present in the moment and feeling pretty good. As soon as the autonomic nervous system senses that there's a possible threat, we move into state one. This is just a little bit increased charge. The nervous system senses it either internally or externally. And whether it's real or perceived, the system is having an experience of state one, which is going to be a little more fear, a little more anxiety, maybe not severe, but it's there. We'll be a little bit hyper alert. We'll be more excitable. We might be a little irritated or annoyed. Physiological, we can experience an increased heart rate. Our breath speed will change. We might have some insomnia because our system is holding this charge. Can be a lot of muscular tension and restlessness, being fidgety. Your thoughts are going to be a little bit more speedy. You might even notice that you're nervous. And state one is a very stable state. Unfortunately, probably most of us living in modern cities live in state one most of the time because there are so many possible threats around us all the time. I mean, any modern home these days that has Wi-Fi, I would bet that you're in state one most all day long. It's a very stable state. Unfortunately, not a state we would be happiest or most healthy in, but it's a stable state. If the system recognizes that the threat has not resolved and in fact the threat is more prominent, we move into state two. This is actually maybe state one is I'm walking down the street and there's lots of cars around me and lots of people. Let's say you're on the street in New York City. You're in state one for sure because your system has to be paying attention to the fact that there's a lot of stimulus going on and it has to judge whether it's safe or not. And then you notice the bus is coming after you and it's going to hit you. Like that, you're in state two now, that it's there, right? So you hit panic. Hyperventilation, heart racing, sweating, shaking. You have the ability to hit maximum performance so that you can either fight or you can run. Okay. This is not just really strongly stressed. This is here is the threat. It's right here. Doesn't last very long because it's an unstable state because the system cannot tolerate to be at maximum performance all the time. So hopefully we're able to manage the threat. And we're able to resolve it, not just manage it, but resolve it. And when we resolve it, we move back down, not right away immediately to relax. The system has to discharge, right? And so if we are allowed to, if we're in a place where we get help, we get it resolved, then we are capable and have the support and ability to allow the system to discharge. We move back down to one. As the system discharges, and hopefully ultimately the goal is to get back to state zero. Okay. So once a threat has passed, we have resolution, our bodies start to discharge, and we can get on with our life. This happens all day long, right? It's a normal process, but in the bus example, let's say that we come to a screeching halt, like right before it hits you, you have this overwhelming charge in the system. But it didn't hit you. Maybe someone pushed you out of the way. Maybe you were able to run away. You're going to want to discharge that, right? So how do we discharge? Well, if you run away, part of the running can be a discharge, right? But maybe someone pushed you out of the way and you want to hug them and thank them. You might even feel like you have to shake that energy off. Some people even vomit or have digestive problems. Or you feel like you need to poop. And actually in the animal world, mammals have the same nervous system that we have as far as this piece of the nervous system. And in the wild, once, if they've been attacked by a predator or chased by a predator, once they get away from the predator, either they physically shake it off, sometimes they vomit, but they often have a bowel movement as well, like to really let the system fully, completely discharge, right? There can be, again, the discharge if we run away. So somehow we need to get that charge out of the system. And that way, once it's gone, we're able to move back down to state zero and be calm and relaxed again. If, however, we don't get away from the threat, if our system either can no longer fight or can no longer run, or the tiger catches us, the bus actually hits us, we're going to move into state three. And this is where we move from stress to trauma, right? Remember, we can no longer say no. And the trauma is here. The threat has got us. And here we are in state three. We call this a cold state because it's not hot, anxious, run away, mobilization. This is shut down, conserve energy, don't move. It's called immobilization. So we'll feel more lethargic, depressed, sleepy, heavy, collapsed posture, less muscle tone. There's fogginess. We might be really dissociated. We might feel nauseous, confused. We might even have suicidal thoughts during this phase. And I know many of you have seen some of my webinars, and I've said this. I'm going to say it again because I think it's important. Suicidality is a normal response, physiological response in this state. So if you're dealing with somebody that's talking about suicide, you have to take that very, very seriously, very seriously. But often I have clients say to me, I would never in a million years kill myself, but out of the blue, I've had these thoughts of suicide and it scares them to have the thought. And I tell them, you know, that it's a common thing for your physiology in state three to have a thought of suicide. So again, as a practitioner, you want to be very careful. If somebody is serious about suicide and it's a real threat, we have to address that. But it's normal in this state for somebody to have a thought of suicide and feel so hopeless that suicide feels like a possible solution. We're trying in state three to find solutions still, right? But the system was so totally overwhelmed that it shuts down. It's immobile. We call these cold states for obvious reasons. And in this state, actually, we feel less pain because it's analgesic. It has an analgesic effect in our system, so we don't feel as much pain, which is a good thing, right? It's a really good response to keep us safe when we have no other options. Many times, we finally, once we're at state three, we finally have some help. We're able to get out of the trauma or the situation and have some resolution. And if that happens, we move back up from immobilization. We have support, or our system has recovered enough to stand up and mobilize into action. That's the ideal situation. If unfortunately we don't have help and we're not able to come up out of freeze, then we're going to move into the more severe state of state four. This is going to be in a more extreme case here. This is the most disassociated state. This can feel like you're totally out of the body, very disconnected from your sensations and your emotions. And literally vision can change here. And this state is, you're going to hit this state if you're in shock, if you had an accident and your body's going into shock, or if you're in surgery and your body is forced into state four with anesthesia. This state four is total shutdown of the system. You might still have some conscious awareness, but it's very dissociated. Okay. So state four is pretty severe, and it's much harder to come out of state four, but it's possible to move back up, but we don't go from four to one or zero. We always have to move back through the charge discharge cycle in the system. And because it can be really uncomfortable as we move from the cold, kind of numb states of three and four up into the hot, agitated, anxious state of state two, it can be very overwhelming to the system. So we might fall back into the cold state. Okay. So as our sympathetic system is activated in stress, we move up this way into this hot sympathetic state. If we hit overwhelm because we can't fix the problem, our system shuts down into parasympathetic, into state 3 and 4. This is not rest and digest parasympathetic. It is not healing, rejuvenating parasympathetic. It is massive shutdown. Healing not happening here. It's a massive shutdown of the system. Okay. So for us to resolve trauma, it means that we have to move from the state 3 or 4 back up into state 2 so that we can finally allow the discharge. We call it riding the wave of trauma. But going from state 3, immobile, to state 2, hot and mobile, is really, really uncomfortable to the system. So we often move back down to 3 to protect us from the discomfort. Okay. So again, we have the ability to resolve the charge of stress and trauma out of the system. But if it's disrupted for any reason, that's the thing. If it's unresolved stress and trauma, not the event itself, but if we don't have the capacity to resolve it for many different reasons, then that's the thing that can lead to dis-ease. Common patterns that we get into is sympathetic dominance, where we're constantly hot, anxious, or parasympathetic dominance, where we're constantly in freeze. Most often what I see is dual activation, where both hot and cold happen either. We fluctuate between the two, or literally in more severe trauma, we can be in both at the same time, which is very, very challenging to treat. Dual activation, both hot and cold, I can explain as in mild, mild form would be like adrenal fatigue, tired but wired feeling, right? We now call that HPAT, access dysregulation, but your clients will know of adrenal fatigue. More severe dual activation is going to be seen in PTSD, and it can be so severe that it's even misdiagnosed as bipolar disorder. So this is a problem for many reasons, because it's really hard to treat. Because what do you treat? The hot symptoms or the cold symptoms? It's really challenging, whether you're looking at natural therapies or you're looking at even prescriptions. It's really challenging. And so many people suffer because it's not understood how to work with this dual activation. So I'm hoping that by the end of this course, you have some ideas on how to do that. So this week, before we meet next week, I'd love for you to think about, what state is your nervous system in most of the time? Are you lucky enough to be mostly in state 0 and 1 and have the ability to move gracefully between the different states when you are up against stress or trauma? Or do you find that you get stuck in anxiety or the hot symptoms, or are you more often in the cold freeze zone? So we can think about it as hot or cold, sympathetic versus parasympathetic. But just be curious about yourself this week and kind of notice, what state do you live in most of the time? Physiology of the normal stress cycle starts with the autonomic nervous system. So this is kind of just a recap of things we've already said. But the body senses danger or threat from inside and from the environment via the autonomic nervous system. The neurotransmitter adrenaline is quickly released for rapid action or reaction to the threat via the SAM system, so the sympathetic adrenal medullary system. Then after the quick-acting neurotransmitters are dispersed, we have hormonal secretion, right? Hormones help us with longer-acting support. So cortisol secreted via the HPAT axis, that's the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis, that's going to help us mobilize, get up and take action, fight or flight. And then once we have resolution, the body shifts gears, we go into the relaxing, repairing state of parasympathetic. This is the full, complete charge-discharge cycle. The hormones involved in that, and thank you to Dr. Rita Maria, I used some beautiful slides that she has from the adrenal module in NEPT. And this is a very, very tightly regulated system. The HPAT axis is incredibly tightly regulated. The glands and the hormones in this process make our ability to deal with stress possible. Okay, but it's so tightly regulated that any disruption anywhere can wreak havoc in the system. And the imbalance of the system truly is a modern epidemic, right? We already talked about chronic stress being associated with the top six leading causes of death, right? This is a big deal, and this is how it happens physiologically. All of the toxic stresses that we're up against these days in our modern world, including the physical and the emotional and the chemical stresses that we're bombarded with, our body doesn't have the tools to manage and recover from these, because frankly, we weren't designed to deal with this much stress and this much toxic overload. So the imbalance is absolutely, every client is going to have probably at some degree some dysregulation of this system. But the autonomic nervous system plays a major role in function in every single system of your body, and it micromanages the interrelationship of all of these systems. So the dysregulation of this HPAT axis eventually can lead to the dysregulation of the entire body. Okay. I threw this, slide in as well, because I think the visual gives you a really good idea of the really complicated interaction between these glands and hormones, right? You can see how the acute stress or the short-term stresses and event traumas trigger the exact same responses in the body as the modern chronic stresses do. Okay, so it triggers these exact same hormones and neurotransmitters and all of these pathways, because the brain cannot distinguish between the different types of stressors. It reacts the same to all types of stressors. So this is really important for us to know, working with our clients, that it's a complicated process, and we need to really honor and respect the fact that it's very, very complicated. And there's so much to know about the stress, the physiology of stress hormones, that we could get really detailed here. I get really excited about the geeky science stuff. I get excited to teach it. And I know that not everybody wants to learn the details, but for those of you in NEPT, you do have access to all of this. I would love to give people more details about this process if they're interested in. But the thing that's important to remember for right now is that it's a very tightly regulated system. And when the autonomic nervous system gets off track, then it can affect all of this, which is really literally the entire body. So if the client is doing everything right and you cannot figure out why they're not getting better, we need to go to the HPAT axis and look for unresolved trauma. This is one of my favorite diagrams, because I think it shows in a simpler way, much simpler visual of all of the aspects and areas of our system that can be dysregulated. I like to think of this, imagine that this is a baby mobile, you know, above the baby's crib, where it's all of these pieces hanging down. And if it's not touched or moved, it hangs in this perfect balance. But if the baby reaches up and pulls on one of these areas, the entire mobile gets shifted and it moved and it's out of balance. And so at the top of this hierarchy really is the autonomic nervous system, but it's very connected with our endocrine and our immune system. So we call it the psychoneuroendocrine immune integration. It's very, very complicated. And what you need to know right now is that stress disrupts this system, which can affect all of these things within our entire body. Okay. Here's a slide that, if people are interested, I would like to go into another class at some point on a deeper level of the science. So I have an article here, and I'll make sure you all have access to these slides so you can look deeper into this if you're curious. But I like this visual showing that the autonomic nervous system, it really is at the top, but it includes the limbic system, the emotional motor system, and the reticular arousal system. It's a very, very complicated, very, very delicate process in the body, that when it's dysregulated, it causes very severe health problems. So, okay, we're not going to get any more detailed than that right now. So I'm going to recap a little bit about the autonomic nervous system and the components here. Okay. Sympathetic, fight or flight. It's like the gas pedal. It gives us action so we can take action, makes it physiologically possible for us to take action in the world and run away or fight. Parasympathetic is the rest and digest. It's also the brake pedal. It puts the brakes on as we discharge from the charge of the stress or the trauma. Parasympathetic system is rest and digest, but it's also part of the massive shutdown response. Okay. There's the enteric nervous system, which is the gut-brain connection. This is really important to understand as practitioners, especially because we all know that really gut health is the cornerstone of a lot of what we do, right? And the main nerve in the system connecting our gut and our brain is the vagus nerve, and it is part of the parasympathetic. It's the dominant part of the parasympathetic system in our physiology, okay? The vagus nerve is the 10th cranial nerve. It wanders throughout the body. It's found in all of the organs and the gut. Okay, so it's a really crucial nerve. It's bidirectional. It gives information from the brain to the body and from the body to the brain. We're going to talk more about that next week. But it regulates digestion, and it's a major component in the gut-brain connection. The polyvagal theory is something that I think is really going to be useful for you to understand when it comes to working with your clients. There are three pathways of response in the autonomic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system responds to sensations in the body from the environment, from inside the body or from the environment via three pathways. And two of these pathways are vagal pathways within the parasympathetic system. Okay. The polyvagal theory states that there's a hierarchy of how we decide how we're going to deal with stress. And that's in evolutionary order from the oldest to the newest pathway in our bodies. So I'll explain this in more detail. But the oldest pathway is the freeze response, and the sympathetic pathway, the fight or flight, is next. The newest response that we have available to us is called the social engagement system. Part of the polyvagal theory is understanding the term neuroception. Neuroception describes how the autonomic nervous system responds to cues of danger and safety before we have cognitive thought or awareness. So all of this happens way before our brains can understand what's happening. And then there's this term called co-regulation. Humans absolutely need, it's an absolute requirement to be with other humans and co-regulate our autonomic nervous systems together, right? So it is an absolute, we call it a biological imperative. We have to have other humans around and available to us to co-regulate for health. So again, three neural pathways that can be activated by stress. I'm trying to just be very mindful of time here. So I'm checking. There's three pathways, right? The from the very ancient pathway, we have the freeze. That's the dorsal vagal complex. It's immobilization, collapse, to conserve energy to survive a trauma. There's the sympathetic fight or flight. Works with our adrenals. It's not part of the parasympathetic, but it's part of the three pathways that our bodies can use if activated by stress. This brings us mobilization, gives us the ability to move towards or away from danger. And then the social engagement, this is the ventral vagal complex. It's parasympathetic as well. This is where we want to be as much as possible. In this space, in this state of the nervous system, which we can also call state zero. There's connection. There's safety. We're orientated to the environment and we're connected with other humans. And if we're threatened and we can't resolve the threat with other humans or with our own ability to, we move into fight or flight. If we can't move away from the danger or we can't fight it off, then we're going to move into freeze. Okay. So follows the hierarchy here. So I'm going to quickly go through these slides. Again, the social engagement system is what we want to strive for most of the time to be in the ventral vagal complex, the newest branch of the nerve. It's myelinated. There's lots of insulation, so it's more effective and efficient. It increases things in our system like digestion, intestinal motility, resilience and resistance to infection, immune response, rest and recuperation, health and vitality, circulation to the skin and extremities, oxytocin, which allows connection and immobility without fear. That means we can relax because we feel safe with the people around us. It helps with our ability to relate and connect. It's a very integral part of the movement in the eyes, turning the head, the prosody in the voice and our breath. It decreases our defensive responses. It allows us to feel safe. We're not as defended when we're in the social engagement system. It looks calm, grounded, settled, compassionate, mindful. And if we're threatened and we can't resolve the threat here, we move to fight or flight, sympathetic. Newer response, allowing for mobility to take action. This gives us the ability physiologically to take action, higher blood pressure, higher heart rate, more fuel available to us. We have adrenaline, oxygen circulation to the vital organs, blood clotting is increased, pupil size increased, dilation of the lungs so we can breathe more. It increases our defensive responses. Okay, it decreases digestion, insulin activity, salivation, the relational ability, is decreased, and our immune response is decreased because we just need to run away from the threat or we need to fight the threat. It looks like panic, fear, anxiety. These are the hot symptoms, right? And if we can't resolve it here, we go to freeze. Also dorsal, also parasympathetic, but it's the dorsal vagal. This is not rest and digest. It's increasing fuel storage and insulin activity. It's immobilization behavior with fear versus the social engagement is we can relax without fear. Endorphins that help us numb and raise the pain threshold are secreted here. And it allows us to conserve our metabolic resources. And so we see a decrease in heart rate, decrease in blood pressure, decrease in temperature, decrease in muscle tone. Our facial expressions and eye contact are decreased. Our breath is decreased. Social behavior is decreased. Attunement, to be able to tune into other people, our ability to do that is decreased. So these are the cold symptoms. And on the outside, it can look very inactive, but actually it's very, it takes a lot of energy metabolically in this state to maintain freeze. It's you're trying to conserve energy, but it takes energy to maintain this state. So on the outside, it might look like you're calm and you're chilled and you got it all together, but on the inside, you don't. You're in this freeze state of trauma. So it can look like dissociation, numbness, depression, helplessness. Often we live in shame in this state. There can be a lot of shame, shutdown, hopelessness. You can feel trapped. And preparation for death might be happening in a severe example. So here's a beautiful visual that I love, the autonomic ladder. Again, another map that we can use for ourselves and with our clients. The ventral vagal state is at the very top. This is our safe social engagement, state zero. If we are threatened and we don't have the resources to get out of the threat, in this state, we move to the sympathetic, mobilized for fight or flight, state one and two. At the very bottom of the ladder is the dorsal vagal, immobilized, collapsed from trauma. So a great activity for you to work on for yourself and you can use with your clients is describe what it's like for you when you're in state zero. When we're in the ventral vagal state, what are the sensations in our body? What are the emotions? What are the mental state when we're in this place versus what it's like when we're in fight or flight versus what it's like when we're in the dorsal vagal state? It's a great opportunity for you just to be curious again about yourself this week. Really pay attention to what are the things that trigger you in and out of these states, and what do the states feel like for you? So in state zero, we have connection. But in state one and two and three and four, we're really just focused on protection. So it's connection versus protection, okay? So the polyvagal theory gives us some great answers to what does it take for us to move from protection back up into connection. Co-regulation, I defined a little bit earlier, but I love, love, love this aspect of the polyvagal theory and this aspect of our physiology. The polyvagal theory identifies co-regulation as a biological imperative. We have to be able to be with other humans in a safe way to sustain our life. And it's through this reciprocal regulation of our autonomic states that we feel safe and move into connection and into trusting relationships. And that state zero, or this social engagement state, is where healing happens. We can't heal very easily in state two or in state three or four, right? Healing happens in this state zero, or in co-regulation, in safe connection with other humans. And it's very physiological. It's not just emotion. It's a physiological need. Our social engagement system is an evolutionary development that occurred when pathways to the face and the head were linked with the ventral vagus in the brainstem. And the integration of the five cranial nerves meant the eyes, the ears, the voice, and the head can now work in concert with our hearts. We send cues of safety and invitations to others to come into connection with us through the signals and the tone of our voice, through our facial expressions, and the tilt of our head. So our nervous systems are communicating with each other below the surface of our cognitive thinking and below the surface of our emotions, okay? It's signaling that it's safe to approach and to come into relationship to help each other to regulate our systems back to calm or back to state zero. So again, neuroception versus perception. Neuroception describes how the autonomic nervous system scans for cues of safety and danger and life-threatening things without thinking and reasoning parts of our brain. Perception is detection with awareness. So our perceptions of our situation are built on past experiences, but our neuroception, our autonomic nervous system, is scanning and is looking for danger without thinking about it. And it's bidirectional, okay? Our conscious thoughts and our unconscious emotional processes influence each other with reciprocity. It's not a one-way street. So we're going to go more into this next week, but I just put this thought in your head. Emotional processes equally influence the physical state. Oops, sorry, wrong way. The physical state and at the premotor level. So reciprocally, the state of the body frames our emotional response. Story follows state. Okay. The autonomic nervous system is shaped through our experience and our perceptions. Okay? It's after our system picks up on cues of danger that our humanness kicks in and starts to make meaning of the cues and creates the stories that shape our life. So we experience the state in our nervous system and the corresponding sensations in our nervous system before we experience thinking with our brain, before we feel, before we create the story, and before we have emotions. So often the stories we create live below the surface of our awareness in our subconscious mind. So I think it's really important to understand this because people with a trauma history have a really hard time regulating their system. They lose their ability and their flexibility to move between the states. We call this autonomic poise, to be able to move between these different states of the nervous system as needed and appropriately is often lost in people with a trauma history. So they can't easily activate their defenses when it's a risky or dangerous situation. They might not even recognize they're in a risky or dangerous situation. They might have trouble relaxing in safe environments. Like they might know it's a safe place, but their system doesn't allow them to relax. It's difficult for them to establish and maintain self and, excuse me, safe and healthy relationships. And having physical and emotional and mental symptoms due to this constant chronic dysregulation of their HPA T axis. It's just a common thing for people with trauma histories to have a lot of symptoms that they don't even recognize are due to their trauma history. So, final note, I'm on time, I'm excited, that trauma is not, sorry, I can't read my whole slide here. Trauma is in the system, it's not in the event, right? Our perception of the event and the story that we tell ourselves, and remember that story is often in our subconscious brain. Our perception of the event and the story that we tell ourselves is really where the trauma lives, not the event that it happened. A lot of things are go in to what does live in our system, right? Our current level of health, our gut health. If we have a disrupted gut, we're going to have a harder time managing stress. If our diet is terrible, if we're not moving, if we don't have exercise in our life, then, and our current level of health is compromised, then the perception and the event, the perception of the event and the story we tell ourselves is going to probably be worse, and we're going to have a harder time managing the event itself. Our environment interrupts or affects our ability to manage the event. Genetics and inherited trauma or generational trauma, like we discussed, can affect our ability and the story that we tell ourselves around the event. And of course, how much support and community we have, how much social engagement we have at the time of the event is going to affect our ability to manage it. And did the threat or problem get solved is going to change our ability to manage or resolve the threat. So our perception, again, our perception of the event and the story we tell ourselves is often underneath the surface. So part of what we want to do with ourselves and with our clients is to bring it to our conscious awareness. So we can absolutely reshape our nervous system and heal these trauma patterns. It is never, never too late because the human body is incredibly capable. It's highly capable of healing and reshaping. And I hope to next week be able to give you some more ideas and some tools on how we actually do this. So now I'm going to open it up for questions. Lynn, do you want to go through any questions there in the chat, or should we just have people raise their hand?
Well, I'm just looking through here. People are just commenting a lot on just how this is impacting them. One thing that was mentioned was, you know, you're talking about social engagement, and social engagement now is all digital, right? And you were talking about the eye motion and everything. Mm-hmm. And how is that changing? What's this doing to our next generation? Oh. There was an interesting discussion here on this.
Yeah, that is an interesting topic. And I think there's a couple points that are important. And one is it's really sad to me as an older woman, not really into social media, that so many of our younger members of society are really lacking actual human interaction, and they're getting more interaction via digital tools. But on the other hand, the ability for all of us right now, all over the country, to be able to connect this way and still see each other and see our eyes and to be able to sense the expression in our voice and the expression in our face, connection is still very possible this way. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to have this type of resource, but it does not replace it. For sure does not replace the one-on-one in-person interaction that's absolutely, absolutely crucial for our health and well-being to have that co-regulation with that social engagement and co-regulation with other humans. But it speaks, I bring this up over and over again because what we do as practitioners and coaches is creating, just being with them is creating this space for healing. We don't have to do much, just being with them, connecting with them, seeing them, hearing them, helping them to regulate their nervous system is probably the most important thing we could do, even before giving them the perfect diet and supplement routine.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Debbie said, hearing at a score of 6 or higher can decrease lifespan by 20 years is challenging. And there was a discussion Heidi shared that these statistics are based on the trauma never being adequately released from a person's system. If you heal the trauma in the nervous system, then I suspect the statistics greatly improve.
Yeah, great point. Remember, it's not the event itself. It's your ability. Did you get to resolve it? If you got to resolve it, it's not likely to stay stuck and dysregulate your system. Your body is really resilient and capable. The human being is capable of living through horrible traumas that don't have to dysregulate us when we know how to. But many of us weren't taught how to regulate and taught how to safely charge and discharge. So that's the great news, is that it's never too late. It doesn't matter how severe the trauma was. When we have these tools, we can absolutely ignite the inborn innate healing abilities of the body. Yeah. I do think it's important to have awareness of the risks, because awareness is really one of my favorite quotes from Eckhart Tolle. Awareness is the greatest agent for change. When we have awareness of the truth of what's happening, it gives us the ability then to choose what we can do. We can do things differently, and we can ignite the powerful healing process of the body.
Yeah.
Never too late.
And Laura had commented, this work allows us to free ourselves from our history and neurologically rewrite it. It's very freeing. Mm-hmm. You are here, so well on your way to healing. Yeah.
We probably don't have time to finish all of the comments or questions. So if anybody has a really burning, intense question they just have to have answered, please raise your hand. And Janine.
Yeah, because I've been going through extra trauma. I've been through trauma all my life, disability on PTSD. But changing diet, all these things have helped tremendously. But lately, I'm having a lot of, like, energy blocks in my body. Will we be going over, like, how to work on those?
Oh, thank you for sharing, Janine. And I'm so glad you're here to get this information. And I'm not sure what, if any, of the other programs you're signed up for, but in the 4-hour class, we won't have a lot of time. But there's so many opportunities for you. I know Laura's doing this on Saturday. If you're involved in that, that's going to give you some great tools and just some understanding that you can build on. And there's so many resources that we can share with you. But there's opportunities within TEH for you to get more and more skills on how to do that. And there's a lot of great practitioners, like even right here in this room, that can support you. So that's a challenging situation, and I'm sorry you're in that, but we have a lot of great tools and support for you for sure. But not in a 4-hour class, unfortunately.
No, I didn't know what we were going to do.
Can I say something on that?
Yes, please.
I think that what I found was most amazing and the most moving was the in-person classes. So the Awakening, which is happening in May, and then the 5-day one that's in September, I think. And the kinds of things, you know, that the blocks and the moves, and watching people move through these things and come out differently and even just facially look different at the end was just so amazing for me. So the Awakening is right before the NEPT retreat. So that, you know, it's a big chunk of time to be away, but it is so worth it to do that. Those of you who did it last year know it was like amazing.
Yeah. I'd like to invite Laura to share any comments or remarks that she'd like to share with us.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, thank you, Kimberly. And thanks, Rita Marie, for what you said, too. I just agree wholeheartedly with that. There's something exponentially more powerful that happens, a very different level and depth of healing that happens in community, in a group, in a safe environment, which is what we create very, very beautifully, very expertly. And you could say it takes really, like, you think of a year of therapy and condense it into 3 days, because also when we come together as a functional family, it gives us that opportunity to have what we didn't have in our dysfunctional family growing up, you know, and not to say all of us came from a dysfunctional family. Some of us did not, but no matter how great a job our parents did or our family of origin did, there are certain needs, you know, that don't get met by just one or two or three people. And so when we have a tribe, when we have a community, we have so much more deep opportunity to have some of the needs met in us that never got to be met, that never. So I really can't express enough how invaluable it is. We only have 2 times a year where we have these in-person, live, intimate opportunities for deep, deep healing. And I love that Rita Marie has tagged this awakening retreat right next to her own, because we also, she and I, are bridging a lot of our work into each other's work too. So I will be there for some of that as well. And so I really hope all of you will plan ahead right now. It's May 14th to 16th. Which is a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, to come to that. And the Create an Energy Connection webinar this Saturday is kind of like an introduction to that retreat. You know, it's a lot of experiential learning, which you'll be doing on Saturday, and Kimberly will be doing more of in next Wednesday's class as well. And so those things all will also speed up the level of healing that can transpire from having this knowledge of awareness.
Mm-hmm. What I noticed at the awakening and the other retreat was that there's a lot of opportunity to redo, like you, to go back to these situations and have a do-over. And yeah. And it's not just about talking about it, it's about doing it. And I remember, if you don't mind me sharing, Kimberly, I won't share the details, but we had a amazingly powerful session together where we were recreating some childhood stuff. And it was powerful, and at the same time, it just, from my perspective anyway, helped me to just release some stuff. And I don't have the serious family background. It was stuff that I perceived, you know, because we're kids, and no matter how good the family life is, we perceive that we're not getting our needs met, just my observation in some, you know, many cases. But I found that experiential work of redoing, like, and not even stuff like, I didn't even know I had this, like, oh, wow. Oh, this is amazing. And that act of redoing it was
right. So amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that, Dr. Rita Marie, because one thing I didn't touch upon tonight yet was that the nervous system, your autonomic nervous system, does not know the difference between a past memory, a present experience, or a future fantasy. So taking the opportunity to be in a safe environment to redo or rework a past experience can catapult your healing, because the system gets to do it the way it wanted to do it and didn't get to back then. Yes. And it doesn't matter how many years it's been. You can have a new experience that rewires the old pattern when you're in safe connection. So when we create the safe environment in person and allow your system to do what it didn't get to do and get what it didn't get, we see really rapid shifts and changes. So, thank you.
And I just want to add one last comment on that, and that is what can affect your genetic outcome. Mm-hmm. Change your genetic outcome. You are not doomed to what, you know, that gene report might be telling you. So there's so much potential that is just still not statistically researched yet, but is absolutely out there and happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Laura, do we have information for people if they want to do Saturday's course, if they're not yet?
If you're not signed up already, you can go to createenergyconnection.com. And that will take you right to where you can register. And we, you know, Rita Marie and I slashed the price way down because we just want everybody to come and take it. So if you have people that it's like $25 now. So please tell your friends, tell anybody that you know. This is a really incredible opportunity for an in-depth 4 hours. Kimberly and I have really been in a lot of close contact because we want these two trainings to really make sense together. And so it's really going to help take this work that she set the groundwork for so beautifully today, tonight. She's, you know, it's going to help you make that, take that more into your body and into your actual visceral experience on Saturday.
I want to just say something about last year's, when you did it last year. We had, I think we had about 25 people on it at the beginning. We had 24 people at the end, and it was 4 hours long. That doesn't happen with 4 hour long webinars. And everybody was just so transfixed and so glued, and the kinds of just transformational experiences they had in those 4 hours. So Janine, you're already in because I think you got it as a bonus for this class, but do come. And if you're not, pay the $25 and come and join because it's so worth it. And you are going to get a sense of what's possible, because when we get locked in these patterns, we don't have a sense of what's possible. We just know what we know, and you're just going to have these reactivities, and you're going to relive this trauma in your body over and over until you learn that there's other ways to deal with it.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Rita Marie. And, you know, for those of you who are coming, you know, make a private, quiet space for yourself with uninterrupted, because your family is going to think you're doing some weird things over there. So you're going to want privacy for this. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we're over our 2 hour time frame. I want to be respectful of everybody's time, and so we'll skip ending comments. But I would like if everyone could put their camera back on so that we can all tune
actually,
in.
Actually, we are right at 2 hours from when we started, because remember we got a little late to start. Right.
There we go.
Great. So I just would thank you so much for turning your videos on so we can just tune in and connect and maybe co-regulate a little bit for a moment. I love seeing all of your faces, and you stuck it out with some of this sciencey stuff. Thank you so much for allowing me to present this information in that manner. And I hope that it resonated with you, and it will build. It's a foundational piece that you will be appreciative, I think, of the understanding as we move forward through not only my next class, but all of Laura's classes coming up as well. So I so appreciate you all. I just want to see all your lovely faces and say thank you again. And I hope to have the slides put into, I have it done as a PDF that I'll give to Lynn so that we can make sure you have access to download the slides. I do have my list of resources that I use to present this information, so books and some websites that you can use if you want some further information or resources, okay? Great. So if you have any questions or anything, you're all welcome to email me before our next session. And until then, until Saturday, we'll see many of you on Saturday. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.